I think they like you, Steve.
Thursday, okay? Just remember Thursday. Thursday. Can you remember Thursday?
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Good morning, Chicago. 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman steering the show this morning for Steve Cochran, who will be back tomorrow for a big SNL exhibit remote. Mary Sandberg is here. Dave Bennett, Mary Vandeville, Steve Grzanich. Everybody is here, ready to rock. Big show today. A nice, cheery morning in the Chicago area. Feeling pretty good. I don't know about you guys, but usually you get to the middle of the week, you're like, oh, run down. You get to Thursday, a little pep in your step. I figure I got a pep in my step.
Yeah, it's Friday Eve, so
yeah,
I think we've. That's I love Thursdays. Thursdays are always like one of my favorite days. I don't know why.
Yeah, I'm good with Thursdays.
There's a Bears Thursdays game tonight.
Yeah,
Thursdays
Bears
a good game
tonight.
Yeah.
And Mitch is playing. I'm excited.
Yeah, you'll see him for like two series probably. Yeah.
Come on, at least we'll see him.
Yeah, I'm never a big fan of any of the players that you count on playing in a preseason game. I like it as a fan to watch them play and say, "Ooh, this is sharp. I like this. Oh, the defense looks good."
Bears posted a video. I don't know if you've seen it, with Chase Daniel, the backup quarterback, mm-hmm. trying to get autographs, standing in the autograph crowd in Bourbonnais and getting his teammates to sign wearing a Trubisky jersey. You have to check it out. The Bears posted it.
They tricked them. Didn't even know.
Well, that's good. Or, I don't know, maybe get in your playbook and get ready for the season. I don't know. One of the two. You can do bits down
in
Bourbonnais.
That's the world we're in now, is you need digital bits.
That's right. It's not all about football. Yeah. Come on.
This is why we're eating potato chips on camera.
That's right. The world of bits. That's where we're at here in 2018. Got a big show coming up today. Chuck Todd's going to join us a little bit later in the hour. Lots to talk to Chuck about. Immigration numbers out today that say that illegal immigration is down. People crossing the border is down. The Trump administration doing a victory lap on that.
And we'll talk to Chuck Todd about when that. You talk to him, we want to play him. Yesterday, Lester Holt was on with Roe. And Roe had Lester talking up songs because he used to be a radio DJ. And they had him do Achy Breaky Heart by Billy Ray Cyrus. So, and he wasn't, you know, he's not even here, but he didn't know. He was stepping all over it. And he blamed our call letters for being the reason why he was having an issue talking up the song.
If he had four letters, right?
Yeah,
then he would be more comfortable. The three, the WGN, it just doesn't work. Yeah, that's great. I remember, of course, everyone, you know, the country goes gaga for Lester Holt. And I'm always like, the guy from Channel 2?
I know.
Cool.
Yeah, he's in a band, though, he was saying.
Really?
He performs gigs, yeah. Like, I think you can get him for a bar mitzvah in New York.
Is it with Joe Scarborough?
It's with all NBC people, I'm not sure who's in it.
Ah, it's so weird. News guys want to be rock stars.
His dream job is to be a wedding singer.
Oh, that's right.
That's his dream.
Because he said you get the grandmas out there, you get the kids all on the dance floor, they're all in a good mood. You're right. I forgot that he said that, Joe.
That's so funny.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
My uncle sometimes does weddings. He's a band. He's a drummer. But he has figured out, and I love it. I love it so much. He is a tremendous drummer, plays at bars, things like that. But, you know, as you get older, more of the musicians will flake on you. So he has figured out how to, with drum tracks and music and everything, to be a one-man band through the drums. So he's able to play the drums and get the track going, sing, do the whole bit, and be the guy at the bar without having to count on his four or five friends.
That's pretty impressive.
So if Lester can figure that out, what Uncle Jack has already figured out up in the Michigan area.
Yeah.
More power to you, Lester. Howard Sudbury coming up. We're going to have Pat Brady, Eric Adelstein, Dean Richards. Also, the swap meet this morning. Greg Flamm will be here. Lots. I'm sure we'll have a lot on Stan Mikita memorabilia. Be great. Of course, we were talking yesterday about the no lights at Wrigley Field. Lights at Wrigley Field. The anniversary is now, so I'm sure a lot of memorabilia from that. And then also live in studio, Frank Fontana will be here. We'll talk Canine Companions and the band Beach Bunny. Started at DePaul University. They are a up-and-coming indie rock band in Chicago, and they're going to be in our performance studio this morning. How cool is that? Very cool.
I'm glad you explained, because I saw on the rundown Beach Bunny, and I'm like, okay.
I will tell you this real quick story. I was doing a, what do you call it, like a speech, or a, went to a class at Columbia College. And I was talking about the downloaders, just talking about the show, and kid raised his hand, 19-year-old kid. He's like, are you the show that had Beach Bunny on? Because we had him on at night, and I'm like, yeah, I am. They're like, oh, that sounded great. And I was like, yeah. So I was like, yeah, we are. We're a hit with the college kids. So that's good. So the obviously,
I like the the way you did the voice. Yeah. Do that again.
Yeah.
What,
yeah.
What did he ask you, Justin?
Yes.
That's no, like, not your voice. His voice. His,
sounds like Wayne's World.
Yeah, right.
You guys,
are you guys Beach Bunny?
It's good.
It was pretty good. And then he put his headphones back on and didn't listen to the rest of the lecture.
I saw somebody on Twitter this morning said that they listened to too many Beach Bunny songs last night and they couldn't sleep because they were stuck in their head.
It's a good stuff.
Yeah.
It's a very good band, and they'll be in our performance studio, which I can't wait.
Do they wear beachwear or bunny wear?
They don't. I don't know. They.
Nice to see.
We'll see what they come in with. See if they a combination of both. How about that?
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Don't kick. Get your kicks. With the top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
All right, let's get to it. The top 6 at 6 today, Thursday. The merger between Sinclair Media and Trib Media, our parent company, is not only dead, but this morning Trib Media announced that they, I guess we, are suing Sinclair for breach of contract. Sinclair had agreed to buy Trib Media, which would have made them the leader in all of local broadcast, but this deal dragged on, went to the FCC. The FCC, which was surprising to many, had a problem with what some of the moves that the company Sinclair had in divesting some of their assets, bounced it to administrative hearing. The deal is dead, and Trib Media suing Sinclair. How about that, guys?
The FCC is the most accommodating it has been in history for these kinds of mergers.
Right.
And the Tribune lawsuit claims that Sinclair used, in their words, unnecessarily aggressive and protracted negotiations with the Department of Justice and FCC.
So that's a fancy way of saying flip their nose at the FCC, because the FCC was, like Steve just said, they were accommodating, and it seemed like Sinclair went out of their way to be like, you can't tell us what to do.
Well, I think because they thought they had the backing of the president.
So. Yeah, right. So how about that? And a day in Chicago, there's been much made about the buying of WGN. Of course, they're more of a television company, but we would be the lone radio station in that deal. So, yeah.
And the bright part of this story this morning, Tribune Media is reporting earnings, a very strong earnings report for the second quarter, even without Sinclair.
All right. So
and for those listeners that saw that they took the WGN letters off the side of the Tribune Tower, those are being saved in storage, and we'll be able to get them at some point once they're done renovating.
So when we rehab the studio and do some nice little farm-like renovation, we can get those letters back. And
those giant
letters. Those are pretty big letters, Justin.
They're not the ones you buy at Target.
Like they're outdoor letters.
Yeah, those are...
But those are popular. Have you been to weddings lately where they have the big giant love like letters and you take pictures? We could have the big WGN letters in here for photos.
Yeah, we'll rent them out
for, you know, charity.
Like, yeah, we can put a nice little flat white on there, maybe paint it, make it rustic.
Maybe just the Walk of Famers, like Dave Bennett laying across the W for... Yeah.
There's a lot of picture opportunities. Yeah. Picture.
Photo ops,
there you go. New immigration numbers out today, and the number of illegal immigrants crossing the border has dropped from June to July, but the number of families that have crossed stayed the same. The Trump administration's claiming that the drop in numbers signals that their zero tolerance policies are working. Others say that the drop is normal, blaming on weather, and the fact that families coming across stayed the same proves that the policies are not working. What? There are two sides to this? Well, what? Yeah. We'll talk about it with Chuck. Chicago and railroad police. There's railroad police? You see this? That's what I took away from this story. Chicago police and railroad police were caught on camera using, quote, a bait truck to catch would-be robbers. This is how it works. A controversial police tactic to put an unmarked, unguarded truck in a bad area and then wait for criminals to try and break in. And then boom, SWAT. They come in with ropes, machine guns, and they catch the would-be criminal.
This is the Wild West with train robbers.
Right. That's the idea. And the ACLU and some politicians are wondering if this isn't just a waste of precious resources and what amounts to entrapment. And I guess their point, and it's one to think about, if you put an unmarked, unguarded car in an affluent neighborhood,
You know, you're not going to get the same. So the idea of putting it in a bad neighborhood and catching criminals that way just seems to be strange because there's actual crime happening.
Well, that's
the thing. Go get the crime, right?
But isn't the goal of this to catch the people who are stealing these guns from the trains, though? And
that's their argument. Their argument being that this is to catch people who would be doing recurring crimes, to catch them, you know, robbing trains that are stopped in that Inglewood yard. But the ACLU says, listen, you know, just catch them. You don't need to be trapping people.
Yeah.
With unmarked, unguarded cars. You know what you do? You put one of those CD cases, you know, one of those vinyl CD cases with all the CDs, you put that on the windows, you know, right there on the dashboard. I'd like to know what they do to grab people's attention. And they said in there was like a bunch of shoes. It was all like...
junk.
Yeah,
not really anything.
Mm. Or treasure. You know, junk,
yeah,
or treasure,
like
swap meet,
yeah.
Ohio Governor John Kasich warned the president for taking credit for what looks to be a narrow victory for Republican Troy Balderson in Ohio. Kasich reminded Trump that the district is so Republican that you usually don't need an election. That's what he said. So for turnout to be low and the Republican to eke out a 1,500-vote victory against the Democrat is more of a referendum on the president and what Kasich calls negative and chaotic behavior. Hmm. So, and we'll talk with Chaudhary. Talk about that, too. The Academy Awards announced that they will not televise certain categories anymore. Short films, anyone? Foreign films, anyone? Design, anyone? There's a lot that they could get rid of. I'm okay with that. Yes. Not sure about this one. They're adding a new popular category. This will be the category that will reward crappy films that did well at the box office. So, hey, my guy, The Rock, he's in the running.
I have a feeling. Yeah,
Skyscraper might be Academy Award.
Super Joe is smiling really big in the producer booth right now at the thought of what crappy movie could get nominated. I mean,
what is that award called?
I think they're calling it popular.
The crapper. It's the Oscar the crapper.
It's kind of a ridiculous notion.
It is. It seems funny.
It is acknowledging, though, that sometimes the most popular thing has nothing to do with what the Academy sees as great work. So
yeah. It's very, I guess American politics have gone in that direction, so why not the Academy Awards? Same thing, right? All right, and finally, a new study out in the Journal of Science Advances, whatever that is, it surveys dating apps.
Those would be advances in science.
Is that a thing? The Journal of Advanced Science? It's called Advanced Science. No, I've never heard of this.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. When you read it, you're like, oh, the Journal of Advanced Sciences. This must be. Do you know what this is, Krasanich?
I believe it's the Advanced Sciences.
Yeah, right.
It's what you find in the periodicals.
Yeah,
in
exactly.
The library.
So it's sort of like college science as opposed to high school science.
Right. Is it Science Advances? This is interesting. They surveyed dating apps in four major cities to find out that most of us prefer to date out of our league. This is essentially the study, that a hierarchy of desirability, they call it, and in the messaging tactics of online daters. So men and women will message potential partners that were on average 25% more attractive than they were.
I love the people that wrote the code for deciding what is 25% more attractive versus, you know, like, Justin, are you...
Yeah, I would love to know how they do
this. You and Dave, you know, like, who's 25% more attractive? Who decides what that...
Absolutely. I want to know if there's one guy, one
obviously
coder...
Obviously, Dave is 25%.
There's one coder in a closet at the Advanced Sciences Journal that's like, hot, not so hot.
Right.
Hot, not like, so hot. Like, how do you do that?
I don't know.
And swipe right. Slap, nope. Slap, nope. Nope. Like, not like.
But you were, as Justin said, you know, a little more callously, like, you aren't going to say, oh, she's ugly. I'm going to swipe right.
Yeah.
So I get
I mean, it makes, I guess it's human nature. If you're not attracted to that person, you would, you know, go for it. And we're all faking, you know, what we look like in all of our social media and dating apps anyway.
Well, they're our best pictures.
They're our best pictures.
Yeah.
I took Arnold Schwarzenegger's body from the movie Red Heat, and I superimposed my face on it.
And by the way, we're all married here.
I know.
Right.
For the right people to be talking about dating.
We have no business talking about this stuff.
It's news, Dave.
I understand.
It's in the Journal of Advanced Sciences. It's news.
Oh, right? You're right.
What is it called? Science Advances. All right, that's your top six at six.
That's it!
That's all today for the top six at six.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
I'm friends with the monster.
Oh, he's a monster.
Monster.
I'm sitting there tweeting.
Monster.
Big, big, big tweeting.
I love you. It's a guy, but I love you.
So
720 WGN. Justin Kaufman stepping up for Steve Cochran, but the gang's all here this morning, including Chuck Todd, who, of course, is the host of Meet the Press on NBC. You can see him every Sunday. Chuck, thanks for joining. Good to talk to you.
Good morning, Justin.
Lots to talk about. Before we get to the serious stuff, Mary Sandberg yesterday heard your colleague Lester Holt on the Rokan show, and feels like Lester is he wants to go back to his roots, essentially, and do music radio. I want to play a little clip here for you to get a listen to this. Go ahead, Joe.
19 minutes countdown, 4 o'clock in Chicago. Achy, breaky heart, dig it on WGN.
Oh, you stepped
wow.
out.
Wow. Oh, I thought it sounded great.
Oh, just saying.
That sounded great.
Just saying. Lester gives a lot of flexibility to Roe's show, and I just feel like if you could introduce some of the songs in the morning, maybe do some traffic updates, some weather updates.
I have always been dying to be a DJ. I've never gotten to do it. I've always thought, and I think the best part, I always thought the art of a DJ, a really great DJ, is when you know the timing of how much time you have before the lyrics start.
It's amazing.
Right, where you can get it all in, and like, you know, the best DJs, just suddenly they're right there. It's just being able to say, and that'll be coming up right, and all of a sudden it's like... Right at the lyric. That's always the art form.
We say in the business, that's hitting the post.
Yeah, and I know
hitting the post.
The olden day DJs, they just had to count it themselves. But these days, you get a little digital thing on the screen.
I know. It's all automated now, isn't it? There's no
fun.
You know, it's like people that love to develop film. No one cares anymore.
Nobody cares.
Chuck, so Lester also said he's in a band with colleagues. Are you one of those people in his band?
I'm not in the band. You know, he's a bass player. I'm a French horn player. Not a lot of, there's like one decent rock song ever that had a French horn solo in it. You can't always get what you want. So, you know, unless he's performing that, it's about the only cameo I can make in Lester's band.
I got to say, that would be an awesome show if you got to like song 7 and they're like, here's a classic. And then they're like, ladies and gentlemen, Chuck Todd. And you came out on French horn.
I'm fine with that. No, yeah. It's, you know, one of my great post-college party moments when I whipped it out. half in the bag and was able to nail the beginning of You Can't Always Get What You Want. You know, some things you better know well.
Oh, wow. Well, we'll let you save that story for Meet the Press this Sunday. You should do that for the first 10 minutes on the show. Obviously, the special election in Ohio was one that dominated political news this week. Mm-hmm. John Kasich came out yesterday talking about the governor there, that this was really a referendum on the president, and this is a vote about the president. Do you see it that way?
100%. I mean, look, let's just look at the state of the economy. Right? Under any other circumstance, this should be a status quo election. You'd sit there and say, oh, the economy's going well, and all that. There is only one reason everything is so chaotic in this political environment, why Republicans are basically on the precipice of losing their at least one majority and maybe both. And it's him. It's Donald Trump. He is the reason. He's the reason that race was close at all. His folks are trying to say, well, his presence there at the last minute bailed them out. If that is true, then things were even worse than folks imagine. If that's what you needed to goose the base turnout was very flat, was very mediocre in that compared to the Democratic base turnout. So there's no way to look at this other than Donald Trump is the singular reason why Republicans are on the precipice of losing the House.
You know, yesterday we had Democrat Congressman Mike Quigley here from Chicago on the show, and he said that, you know, from his political campaign experience, that every race is different and that it's really difficult to show trends in one specific suburban Columbus, Ohio race. Is it too much that we're playing and pulling out what happened there and kind of putting it on the president and what's happened nationally?
If this were the only special election we had to use this year as a guidepost, I'd agree. The thing is, if you go back to that first special election for Tom Price, who now is the former HHS secretary, the Georgia special election, that, if you recall, was way back in April of 17. In my head, sometimes it feels like it was just a couple months ago. But that was over a year and a half ago. And essentially, whether it was that race, whether it was the six other House specials that didn't get as much attention that year, whether it was the Pennsylvania special election, the Virginia governor's race, the Alabama Senate race, the pattern's been the same. It's not just what we saw in Ohio. What happened in Ohio yesterday was just reaffirming everything we had seen for 14 months in every special or planned election going. Democratic enthusiasm is up. Republican enthusiasm is flat. And the affluent suburbs, whether it's Spokane, Washington, Columbus, Ohio, Washington, D.C., the suburbs, everywhere in this country, you see Republicans moving toward Democratic candidates. Not saying they're becoming Democrats. They're basically, right for now, certainly not voting Republican.
Right, and not unlike what we saw in 2016, where Democrats who weren't necessarily for Hillary Clinton moved to the middle, or Republicans voted for Donald Trump. So my question is, what does the president and the establishment or the Republicans that are under the president, President Trump, what can they do to stem the tide? I mean, because the economy numbers are strong, you're starting to see a lot of people who will interact with our program here who tell us that, hey, he's getting things done. These are the issues that we voted for. I don't care what he tweets. I mean, is that really the tonic? Is the tonic for him that the numbers of the economy continue to grow, that immigration numbers decline, illegal immigration numbers decline? What is it that will counter the sort of, as John Kasich calls it, the negative chaos that the president is associated with?
Just staying silent, not being self-aware that everything he does seems to, when he inserts himself. I mean, look, he's a polarizing figure. I don't think that's going to get fixed. The problem Republicans have, especially if you're in a congressional district like that Ohio district, is that Ohio district is not a straight suburban district. It's one of these congressional districts, and when Republicans drew the maps, these were their sort of their gold bars of districts to draw so that they get the majority. These were their majority makers, and they were districts that straddled the suburbs and sort of more rural or ex-urban parts of the community. And the problem that Republicans have is to get folks in the ex-urban areas, the farther away from these cities, the president's popular. And that attitude that you just described, hey, getting things done, I don't care about the tweet.
Yeah, right.
But those that live closer in the more affluent suburbs who are more open, don't like his immigration rhetoric, don't like his rhetoric on race, don't like his rhetoric on women. Those folks, his presence almost turns them off. And yet if you're a Republican member of Congress, you need those voters. Right. But you need those Trump base to turn out, too. And I think that you have to make a choice, unfortunately. To win over one, you have to you almost have to write off the other. And, the Trump base is bigger, and that's why you see so many incumbents at the end of the day acquiescing to Trump. They're not excited about having a campaign with him, but they think it's worse if you're caught looking like you're not with him.
Yeah. Chuck Dodd, the host of Meet the Press, both on Sunday and every afternoon. I just want to say thanks again for joining us. Talk a little Republican politics, and I always have I'm trying to do my talk up to the post. We can play some music, too.
Well, let me help you out really quick. Sunday, Omarosa, Manigault, Newman on the show.
Oh, awesome. All right, Chuck, thank you, bud.
There you go.
There you go. Guys. Chuck Todd on the program. And, the one thing I will say, Mary, is I think that sometimes, I don't know, I think we have revisionist history, but, it was the midterms for the former president, President Obama. There was a point, even in 2015, where there were a lot of Democrat candidates that didn't want the president to come out and campaign for him or for them.
Right.
There was a lot of pushback on the president not being popular at certain points. This isn't only about Donald Trump. This is a lot of times it has to do with how people perceive how the president is doing, and they want them to be, they want to run their own race. They don't want the president sort of around. It works both ways. It's, when they're hot, they use them.
Get them on your train. If you kick them right off.
But it's not new, right?
No,
this is not
new.
Something that is specific to the president we have right now. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. And I want to play a little excerpt from a podcast I did this week with John David Washington, Denzel Washington's son, who is a star of Ballers on HBO and also the new movie Black Klansman, a Spike Lee movie, which is out this weekend. All right, we got a six-pack of Pepsi. 312. Here they are, Icky Breaky Hard on WGN.
You couldn't hit it either.
I know. Maybe Lester's right, the call letters. Said that the guest really said the row that it's the call letters. If you had four letters, you would have that time.
There's a gentleman down the dial who used to do US 99, he could talk that song up. I heard him talk it up, you know, when I was in high school. So
It's the Cochran Show. I'm Justin Kaufman, stepping up for Steve. He's back tomorrow. We're going to a live show tomorrow at the SNL exhibit. You know what? You can come see it. You get a tour of the exhibit. Sixth caller right now, 312-981-7200. Come out. We have a great show lined up. Great guest, Dan Aykroyd. It's going to be awesome. And come on out and experience it. And you also get a private tour of the exhibit. It's only open until the end of the year. So right now, sixth caller, 312-981-7200. You get a pair of tickets to come to the event tomorrow morning. As I've mentioned many times on this show, that I have a podcast I do here at The Download. The Download was the show I did at night. And it sort of was a different format where we were able to do longer interviews because of the format at night. This week, I have an awesome guest. We just released it today, John David Washington. John David Washington is the star of the new Spike Lee movie, Black Klansman. And he's also the star of the hit show on HBO, Ballers, which comes back this weekend.
Dave and I are both Baller viewers. So
he plays Ricky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And he is also, you not know this, Denzel Washington's son. And I want to play a real quick clip here because we talk about that. He, for a long time, decided that he did not want that to be known because of the life that he lived. Leaning out, he didn't want any special favors. And he actually got out of acting. He didn't want to be an actor. Even though he wanted to be an actor, he got out of it because he didn't want to follow in his father's footsteps. So let's play a little bit of that. Interview where you talked about watching your dad in Shakespeare in the Park.
Yes.
That's what got you interested in acting.
Yes, yes, yes. It was Richard III, Shakespeare in the Park. We would walk around New York sometimes. I was a little boy, and he'd recite his lines, you know, "Now it's the winter of our discontent," and like he'd just keep reciting all around. So I just fell in love with the craft. That and Glory did it for me. And then my mother, Juilliard, you know, she was a classically trained pianist, taught lessons at 11 years old in North Carolina. I mean, these are people, again, it's not the fame or the success. What success meant to them was feeling like they told the truth on that stage. It was about the process. And Spike Lee, again, he values process.
You know, for you, you talk a lot about being a young kid and being interested in acting, yet you pushed away from that and moved into athletics, into football, and now you find yourself with a career, being the star of Black Klansman. Mm. What pushed you away? What was it that said, "I don't want this to be my career"?
You know, as my father started, ascending into the business, as his stock had been rising, as he was becoming more recognizable, I was recognizing at a young age how different life was, how people were treating us, how people were treating me, especially after Malcolm X. Our life like literally changed. We needed more security. There was, you know, some threatening things that were happening. It was, my life had changed. So I saw, as a kid, I was like, so the result of doing your research and loving the craft and getting into character translates to this kind of success?
Right.
I don't know if I want that. I just want to do the acting stuff. I don't know if I necessarily, you know, so that kind of changed it. And then also too, because of how I was getting treated, there was resentment building up, like, oh, they just want to be my friend because of, you know, everybody just wants to talk about my father. I think it's nepotism. I think I'm getting handed everything. Right. So football, that used to piss me off. So I could put that kind of rebellious spirit and that anxiety almost and that resentment, I can funnel it into something positive. I can use it as fuel to drive the engine to independence, which is what I was doing with football. I earned my own scholarship at Morehouse. I got to NFL. I was a professional bench sitter, you know, and I did that job with pride. All right. Still got some splinters. All right. but at least I earned that. I earned the right to sit on the bench and cheer my team on like a cheerleader. You know what I mean? I earned that right. My father had nothing to do with it.
Right.
So that, but underneath all those layers, I'm like, I just want to act though. I just want to do this. You know what I mean? I really do. But, and then it became sort of reluctant and sort of, well, more apprehensive because of, now I'm starting to get, once I saw that I'd have these successful games and the newspapers would say Denzel's son runs for 100 yards and 5 touchdowns, I'm like, well, I can't escape it in this thing. I might as well get into the other thing.
There we go. Yeah. A little snippet right there of an interview with John David Washington, the star of Black Klansman and Ballers. You watch Ballers, Mary?
Oh, yeah. I watch Ballers. Dave loves Ballers. Mm-hmm. We talked about that.
It's a good show.
Yeah. It's more entertaining than I thought it was going to be in the beginning because I'm like, why do I care about these athletes and their agents? You know, but right. they do a nice job.
Yeah. Well, anyway, you can find that interview at WGNradio.com. It's a download podcast. It's a great... We do about half an hour talking about the movie, which is... based on a true story of the first African-American police officer in Colorado Springs who infiltrates the Ku Klux Klan there. He does it. It's kind of like a Cyrano de Bergerac because he's on the phone and then he tells his... It's not a light topic, but it's a funny movie. It's Spike Lee. It's a perfect... That's kind of all Spike Lee movies. But a really interesting film, and it also comes out on the year anniversary of the protests in Charlottesville. And there's a lot about that in the film. So, but John David Washington, what a weekend for him. Think about it. Movie, probably going to be the number one movie of the weekend. And on top of it, you have... Ballers as well.
Yeah, coming back. I want to know how come when he came to the studio, you didn't make an announcement so we could all get a photo. Yeah.
he came through. I feel like I got a photo with him.
I think you hit him.
Yeah. snuck him in. Yeah, maybe we did.
I'm telling you, it's a lock.
But it rained last night.
Exactly. This horse loves the slop. It's on his bloodlines. His father was a mutter. His mother was a mutter.
His mother was a mutter?
What did I just say? Come on, let's go to the office. I'm going to call my bookie. Hey, don't tell anybody.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
I got the horse right here. The name is Paul Revere.
A big weekend in Chicago if you're a horse racing fan or just a fan of big events. The Arlington Million. That's awesome. To have such a premier race in Chicago, especially at Arlington. It's so cool. And Howard Sudbury is here, a longtime sportscaster who now works for Arlington. Great to see you, Howard. Thanks for being here.
Great to see you. I'm thrilled to be up in this new studio with this beautiful view looking over the lake. The weather looks good now. And it's supposed to be great on Saturday for the Million, too.
So, I mean, as I just said, I mean, it's exciting for sports fans, not just horse racing fans. Do you see it that way, that people get up for the Arlington Million more than they would for other stuff that's happening at the park throughout the year?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's an entertainment day. There's all kinds of things going on. We have a concert this year with Eric Paisley, who is a Grammy-nominated country singer who's had quite a few hits. He's free in the park area with general admission. Cornelison sings the national anthem. The crowd goes crazy. He sings. Frank Catalano, who is a Grammy-nominated saxophonist, is going to play a couple performances. So we have something going on between every race. We have a fashion contest with prizes for that. So it's a full day of entertainment, and you can go home with the money full of pocket, a pocket full of money. Or a money full of pocket.
I like money full of pocket.
That's usually me.
You have watched the Arlington Million grow as I have. We were around for the infancy of this race.
And I wasn't. I was a little young.
Well, I know. You're a little... Okay. You couldn't resist.
I've been around.
But it's hard to imagine. This is the 36th running of the Million. I remember being at the Million at Woodbine in Toronto when Arlington was being rebuilt.
Right.
What have you seen in terms of growth from this race over the years?
Well, it began in 1981, and it was the first $1 million purse for a thoroughbred race. And I think that it has really grown in prestige. More and more horses come from Europe every year, so that makes it kind of unique. And in a handicapping, you know, trying to pick the winner, because it's hard to look at the horses that are running here in our country and see the best from Europe. So I think that is really one of the biggest changes. The other change is the entertainment. You know, the food is important. There's great food out there. There's a lot of variety. You can dress up. There's a fashion contest. Guys wear fedoras. Women wear their best hats and dresses, like the Derby. And then you can go in shorts and T-shirts and go out in the park and listen to the country concert.
How important is that? I mean, when I think of horse racing, especially if I'm a casual fan, it is about the tradition. It is about what happens around it. I mean, think of the
Derby, as a lot of people I know are like, I'm having a Derby party. I'm like, what do you know about the like horse racing? But it becomes much more about the tradition and the event than it does the actual race.
Yeah, well, it's about fun. I mean, it's a fun day. I mean, with bands all over the place and live music and drinks. And, you know, you don't have to be an expert on picking horses. You can, you know, just look at the list of the names of the horses. Pick a name you like. Pick it out. The horse might win at 40-1. If you cash one ticket during the day, I think most people will go home talking about that, even if they lost money for the day. So it's about fun.
And it's a good family event, too. I like the horse Backyard Heaven. I think that sounds like a thing I'd be into. When we were looking stuff up for this, it describes the Arlington Million as a left-handed track. Is there any track that isn't left-handed?
Yeah, in Europe and England, they run the other way around. They say that we run the wrong way. We say they run the wrong way, but we're a left-handed track, so the horses turn to the left. Yes.
I didn't know. Did you know that?
I did not know that. That's interesting. Howard, for you, for being a longtime sportscaster in Chicago and making that transition to work for Arlington, have you recognized more or learned more about the nuances of horse racing and the sport and the industry in your time working with Arlington than you did before?
Well, I've learned more about the business of horse racing, the nuances of the sport itself. My dad trained when I was a kid, when I was young. I grew up around horses. I learned how to handicap. I know how to read the charts. So I knew all that. When I worked at Channel 2, Johnny Morris and I used to go to the track all the time. When we would go and, you know, make it in time for the sports cast, but we'd be at the track right before the sports cast. So I've been around it. But the business of horse racing, yes, I've learned a lot about it and how to market it and, you know, what attracts people. And my philosophy is you walk up and down Michigan Avenue right now and you ask them if the race is going on, some will know, some won't. Most won't know one horse that's in the race. Right. Most can't tell you who won last year. And I don't know that that's important. When you get out there, you get the list of the horses, you buy the book, you pick one out, you go for it, you make your bet and hope you're right.
You know, it was a mainstay of Johnny and Howard's sportscasts on Channel 2. And when we all worked at CBS, we used to give the race results on radio. And you guys always ran the stretch run of the feature race from Arlington on the evening news.
We did. You're going way back in time when we had all kinds of time for sportscasts. Now they get about 2.5 minutes you know, give the Cubs score and two highlights. But we had on the 6 o'clock news, it went for an hour. Bill and Walter did it. And we had 6.5 minutes. So we showed a stretch run of a race from every day on the radio. You gave the Daily Double,
the trifecta.
You know, I still have people ask me, you know, why doesn't Sun Times have 2 pages of horse racing coverage? And I said, well, look at the newspapers. You know, they're about you know an eighth of an inch thick now. They've had to eliminate content. So
has the industry
you can get
adjusted?
It on the internet.
But as the industry adjusted, are there more trade papers or sites for horse racing than there were before because of the lack of coverage in the mainstream?
Because
media?
Of the internet, sure, you can find out any kind of information you want on the internet. Equibase.com is one. You can bet online. TwinSpires.com is owned by our company, Churchill Downs Incorporated. You can make a bet right now, you know, on today's races. So, it's changed a lot.
Yeah. All right, you always bring in international horses for the International Festival of Racing. What's it look like for this week?
Well, they always bring in some heavy hitters, and they're hard to handicap. Deauville is a horse that is back from Ireland, ran third last year, and I believe has run third the last 2 years by one of the leading trainers in the world. His name is Aidan O'Brien. My favorite horse, the morning line favorite right now, and the morning line is the odds maker has to guess what odds that horse is going to go off at. Not necessarily who he likes, but what the odds are going to be at post time. And that is Oscar Performance, who breaks from the outside. That's the 11. Right now I'm leaning toward Robert Bruce, who is the 10.
All right, there you go.
Well,
and you,
well,
like,
I don't know if you go or not, but
Eric,
that's my
Pasley,
pick.
Eric Pasley is great. I Want to Be Your Friday Night is one of my favorite
songs. That's a great song.
You're for the music.
Yeah, and the outfits. I like the outfits. And if I happen to win a few dollars. But I like
what was it, Backyard Heaven?
Backyard Heaven. And I like when someone says, here's $20, Mary. go put it on something. And I say, I feel much more comfortable gambling with other people's money.
I feel like I make all of my choices on how creative the name of the horse is.
There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. And you know what? And when I read the charts and I have a pretty good idea who's going to run well, if you pick a horse because of the name or because the jockey's colors, I'm not going to talk you off that horse because it'll win.
It'll
and
win.
Mary, can I find the person that gives out $20 to bet with?
Yeah. Yes, I will share my sources.
His name is Orion Samuelson.
Orion will be there.
Howard Sudbury,
yes, he will.
The Arlington Million is this Sunday.
Saturday,
at Arlington Park, of course. A huge race and a big moment for Chicago when it comes to horse racing. Howard, always a pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me. Good to be with all of you.
Arlington Million this Saturday. All right, we'll take a quick break, get an update on what's coming up in the news, and then the most valuable person on the planet and Pat Brady and Eric Edelstein talk a little politics.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Justin Kaufman in for Steve, stepping up for Steve. Mary Sandberg, Steve Grzanich, Dave Bennett, Mary Vandeveld. Pat Brady and Eric Edelstein coming up. We're going to talk about Chicago violence, of course, the big story this week, but politically how it shakes out. And, of course, we have the mayoral election coming up, but also the gubernatorial election. It'll be interesting to see if this issue becomes one for the state of Illinois, not just the city. Before we do that, it is time for the most valuable person on the planet, and that person for August 9th, 2018 is Zach Edwards. Zach Edwards is a U.S. Coast Guard officer who, on the biggest day of his life, he's getting married in front of the ocean in Alabama. Huge deal, you know. Says I do. In the background, someone needs help. Someone is drowning in the ocean, and Zach decides to leave the altar and go jump in and save the guy. How about that? Zach is on the line with us right now. Zach Edwards, thanks for joining us in Chicago. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
Is that accurate? I mean, the story likes to play on all the puns, the I do's, but is that, I mean, were you at the altar? Was this in the middle of your wedding?
It was during the middle of the photo shoot afterwards. We were doing the pictures.
So you're doing the pictures. You're all tucked up. You're ready to rock. It's the ocean in the background. Take us through this. What happened?
So we were towards the end of the pictures, and a lady came up and said, you know, there's a guy out there. He's having a hard time getting back in. And my wife and I looked out and saw him and noticed, you know, he was in distress. You can see the look on his face, and he was getting pulled out pretty fast because it can happen very quickly. So I looked at her. She looked at me. She knew what I was thinking. She said, go get him.
Wow.
So I took my shirt off as fast as I could. I started to take my pants off. She said, no, you don't have time. So then I just ran out, started swimming towards him. And it was two other people that were trying to make their way to him, later, probably older teens, with boogie boards, and I didn't want to turn to a multiple person rescue because it was bad out there. So I grabbed the boogie board from one of them, told them to go back, made it out to him. The other person was following me, made it out to the young man, but they were grabbing by the wrist as he was saying, I can't breathe. He had a boogie board someone had given him. I was able to take the one that I took from the other, commandeered, I guess you could say, from the other person, and prop it under his, and then pulled him up and we started swimming back, made about halfway, and that's when the current kind of stopped our progress, and I had my pants on, so it was kind of hard to kick as well. And at that point, my goal was just to keep his head out of the water, because I knew, you know, emergency services, first responders would eventually be there. So, you know, he was choking from time to time on water. So at that point, my goal was to keep him up and out of water and breathe.
Yeah. And they
made it to us.
Yeah, the fire department and the Orange Beach, Alabama Surf Rescue came in with jet skis and saved them. Mary, I don't even know what to say about this, because it's such a tremendous act for you to do this, especially in the middle of your wedding.
Well, yeah, and the photos are very important, and I know saving life is more important, but his wife signed off on it by saying, you better get out there now. But then your wife also ended up coming into the water too, didn't she?
Yeah, so as the jet ski had pulled us back up onto shore, she was kind of walking out into the waves or the ocean, and the sled had beat me up a little bit, so I was bleeding from my nose, and her dress was, you know, we got it the day before. It was very, you know, it was the perfect dress, so I went back into wedding mode. I told her to stop, you know, don't get your dress wet, which it was a little too late, and I didn't want to get blood on it, and so I think in one of the pictures, you can see me kind of pulling her out of the water. In the background.
Well,
so,
I guess there's photographers there to capture this, but I was going to say, this sounds like everybody's typical wedding. Don't get the dress wet, don't get blood on the dress, all that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, most guys will do anything to avoid the pictures, but this, you know, Zach went pretty far to avoid the pictures.
Zach, and then was it just a normal reception after that? Was it, or did you go back to the pictures? Yeah. What happened after that?
Absolutely. It was so we showed up at our guests all were supposed to meet us at the reception because we were going to do family pictures, and we did. So they saw the emergency the boats go by with the sirens on and everything, and not realizing what was going on. And then we showed up. Obviously, I was in a bathing suit and my wedding shirt, and they had kind of heard a little bit through the grapevine, like other people that trickled in. So they were like, "Whoa!" It was kind of a big surprise, and then it was a normal reception after that.
Hey, Zach, you got to go down to the Floribama down there and charge a drink to Justin Kaufman.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right down there.
You got it. Zach, tremendous. You are our most valuable person on the planet today. Zach Edwards,
I appreciate it.
A Coast Guard, with the Coast
Petty
Guard
officer.
Down in Petty Officer in Orange Beach, Alabama. Zach, thanks so much for joining us here in Chicago. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Amazing story, huh, guys?
That's great.
I mean, if you're gonna draw up who's going to be the most valuable person on the planet,
right,
how about Zach?
Better than the fingernail thing.
Yeah. I think Mrs. Zach deserves some credit, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's tremendous. You're absolutely right.
I can't see Sandberg letting Pat Boyle go.
Oh, no. You mess up my photos, we're going to have a real problem in my house
and
going
my dress.
Forward. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. Pat Brady, Eric Edelstein are here. It's Steve Cochran Show. Stay with us.
It seems inconceivable to me, with that many shootings, that many deaths, that there are zero arrests. I raise the question of whether or not we have enough cameras in these crime-plagued neighborhoods to make sure that we're recording real-time what's going on. Many of these parties were advertised on Facebook. They were trending on Facebook. So why is it that we didn't have enough officers on the beat around these parties to make sure that people were safe?
Conversation continues around Chicago violence. This past weekend, we saw 74 shot. Yesterday, Superintendent Eddie Johnson announced that he was going to put more cops on the beat, especially in the weekend and in certain areas. But he also acknowledged that there were zero arrests when it came to the shootings from this weekend. Continues to be a big point of conversation here in the city of Chicago and nationwide, but also it has political ramifications as there are two elections, a gubernatorial election that is coming up, as well as the mayoral election coming up in February. In studio, Pat Brady, Eric Edelstein, as they are every Thursday. Guys, good to see you.
Good to be here.
Thanks for coming in. All right, so let's get to this issue. I mean, politically, it hasn't really been an issue, Chicago violence, that has hurt the mayor, because you saw the violence numbers be big during Mayor Daley, big during Rahm Emanuel, and he did win re-election. Is this something that has political ramifications when it comes to the state of politics in Illinois?
Well, I mean, first of all, it's a tragedy that transcends politics, no question
right.
about it. And I think we all can acknowledge that. You know, anything that's top of mind and an issue of public policy is going to be a political issue. I think to just put it in the box of the mayoral election, though, is short-sighted. I mean, I think that, and again, this isn't so much about blame as it is to find root causes and solutions, but you can't separate the budget crisis we've had in the state of Illinois, the cutting of social service programs. There were, you know, a couple of years ago, 1,000 kids, high school Chicago kids, who were at risk, who were cut out of after school programs because of the budget fight going on. I don't blame Rahner, blame the legislature, whatever. You can't separate
right.
the public policy in Springfield from what's going on in Chicago. Having said that, you know, I think this is a big enough crisis that Democrat, Republican, liberal, communist, libertarian, whatever, every elected official, they ought to sit down at a summit and they ought to get it solved.
Pat, what do you think?
I agree. I don't necessarily agree that this is a problem, a result of the budget impasse. This problem goes back probably 50 years in the way that the city's been structured. Listen, if you want to watch Mayor Rahm Emanuel's head explode, suggest you bring in the National Guard troops, which I think we should. Nothing they've done has worked in the last couple years. Bring them in, stop the cycle of violence, save a bunch of kids' lives, release a bunch of hardworking single moms that are trying to do the right thing in these neighborhoods. I think you need something drastic right now. A lot of people, most people disagree with me on that, but if it were me, that's what I'd do.
Yeah, I'm not for that, but I am for a comprehensive solution. And again, part of the solution can't just exist at the city level. You know, we're doing work in New York State for Governor Cuomo, and you know he's been very active, even with Republican legislature, in doing things that affect crime in New York City.
Right.
You really need the state officials to be passing laws that have to do with gun possession. Right now, the state of Illinois has these gun possession charges where people get arrested for illegal handgun possession and are back out on the street.
Now that was the that's the Tony Preckwinkle push to try to get alleviate the impasse at the jail, which the sheriff's been fighting. It's a ridiculous state of affairs right now that these gun offenders get out quicker than people.
Well, I mean, it's the knee bone connected to the hip bone in the way that all of these policies have to work in one way or another, because you can have an unbalanced situation where one thing is good for overcrowding in the jails, but at the same time it puts criminals, would-be criminals, back on the street.
Well, here's where I go with it, and I agree you got to have a comprehensive solution, but this has been the topic of discussion for 30 years, and nothing's been done to stop it. And I think it's time for some drastic measures. You just need to stop the cycle. Maybe you block off the intersections at night so these people can't get in and out. There are solutions that are much more drastic that nobody really wants to hear. But to me, I think it's time.
Well, but and hopefully Pat is one of those open-minded Republicans who isn't afraid to take on the NRA, because the flow of guns into Indiana, into Illinois, I don't want to hear that garbage argument that Chicago doesn't allow handguns. These guns all come across these gun trains. It's so easy for these gangbangers to get access to firearms. It's a function of the NRA becoming basically a mouthpiece of the gun manufacturers hiding behind the Second Amendment that have flooded these urban areas with guns.
Beyond the National Guard, the other issues that have been brought up this week, and Rudy Giuliani kind of brought this up in his tweets about Gary McCarthy's tactics.
He misspelled his name.
Yeah, I know, right? But really, this is about
that
McCarthy.
Pay extra for the
he was able to bring crime down in Newark and other places because, well, and a lot of people, critics will say, because civil liberties were taken advantage of, that people were stop and frisk on the street and a lot of their rights were infringed upon. The
stop
National
and
Guard,
frisk is not per se illegal. Yeah, but here's my issue, and again, I'm going pretty far to the right today. I'm sick of the cops being the bad guys here. I've worked in law enforcement for a long time. These police officers are dedicated public servants, and I think they have one hand tied behind their back, because every day we hear about some, and there are problems, believe me, I saw it in the system, but we need to get back on the side of law right. enforcement and recognize there are a lot of good, hardworking cops that need help down there.
What is I guess the question is, we've seen the National Guard and stop and frisk, they all kind of fall in the same category. Do you have to give up some of the rights that are given to you as a U.S. citizen to deal with criminals, deal with people, gangbangers on the streets of Chicago? Is that the right course of action? This idea that you have to give a little, take a little, and compromise to be able to take on such a complex issue?
I don't agree with that. I think you have to get back to a real social compact, which says that you're going to live in communities where citizens trust law enforcement enough to report crime, to be witnesses, that you're going to have economic opportunity. I don't care if you're Democrat or Republican, if that comes from the private sector or it's government programs, but you create zones of opportunity in places where kids have no other choices. You've got to create a situation where you don't have six guns for every American in this country. So, no, I don't think you have to compromise constitutional rights or civil liberties to get to the solution. What you do have to get is past this sort of broken politics moment that we're living in to actually get something done.
Listen, I've been with Eric for 5 years. He's learned a lot. I agree completely. That means
Eric Adelstein, Pat Brady. We're talking Chicago violence and political ramifications. Let's continue that conversation.
Listen to Pat Brady.
Listen to Pat Brady.
A Republican rarity who fought for same-sex marriage rights. Yeah. Listen to Pat Brady.
Good, right? You like that? I figure that's old hat.
Listen, Eric's my partner in this. Eric needs a song.
I'm out of here. This is outrageous.
You want a soft rock song?
This is outrageous.
I think the bigger problem is Eric's mom. Every time she hears Pat Brady's song, it kills her a little bit inside.
Right. She says, I thought you were on that show, too.
Be careful what you wish for, my friend.
Edelstein's hard to rhyme.
Yeah, Edelweiss.
Oh, you could do a ton with Edelstein. Oh. Stein, wine, bind. Yeah. Pat Brady, Eric Edelstein here. We're talking politics today, talking about Chicago violence and political ramifications. You know, if it's hypothetical. Let's say the governor has the right and the only, I believe the only person has the right to call in the National Guard in the state of Illinois. If this National Guard was called in because of Chicago violence, is that a political win for a governor? I would think that would be a big risk space for a sitting governor.
Depends on what happens, but I think if history's any judge, when you do it and do it the right way, politically it's a big winner.
I think it would be a disaster. I think it would be a disaster for the state. I think it would be a disaster for the city. It might be a temporary fix, but ultimately those National Guard troops have to leave. And what are you left with? You're left with sort of failure in its wake, demoralization of the police force, a population that says we're a broken city. I don't think that's the solution.
But what's the alternative? We've been hearing the same proposals for the last 30 years. And listen, I don't like to see it either, but when you have 70 shootings, or however many there were last weekend, something's not working.
I wonder, because, you know, if you think about, if you've been to places like Belfast, Northern Ireland, you think of that's a militarized the space where there are checkpoints. You got to show your ID to get on certain blocks and certain areas. That's not a great look.
No, but it's not permanent either. But we need to, in my opinion anyway, and nobody agrees with me on this, I just think you need to stop the cycle.
Yeah. I mean, most people don't agree with you on most things, right?
Most people are a lot smarter than me.
That's obvious. I mean, the texter brings up a great question. What would the National Guard be able to do that the Chicago police can't? I mean, obviously there are different forces. There's serve and protect versus a militarized force
working together. It's not like it's an exclusive thing, but I just think that's what you need.
But it's bigger than just the law enforcement side. It's bigger than just troop presence. Yes, that's one of the things, and I think we could argue about community policing and cops getting out of their cars and responding versus patrolling, but you also have to have economic opportunity. You got to have schools that are good. You got to have jobs for kids that graduate high school. You got to have all that stuff. And that's not just on the mayor. That's on the state. That's on the legislature. That's on every elected official.
I agree completely. And the political ramification of that probably for me is there's going to be a big boot on my car when I go outside.
Because once the National Guard comes in, they maybe stop some violence right in the but that doesn't stop it from starting over again the minute they leave.
Yeah, but you give everybody a break, and it's like the surge was in Iraq, cleared it out and start over.
But I think that imagery is one that I would have a hard time being a citizen of Chicago and state of Illinois and the United States of America of thinking of a surge in any form that you would be.
I completely agree, but this is a national story right now. I got texts from all over the country, people asking me what's going on in the city.
Would be better suited to put more money towards law enforcement locally, police, try to get the legislature to sign off on giving more resources to the city of Chicago?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think when you have the sort of budget chaos we've had in this state, when, yes, the city funds a lot of their own programs, but you are in part of this state where you need those social service programs. You need that revenue coming back into the city, and you need cooperation. And again, this is where I go to the broken politics, and both parties are somewhat to blame. But when you have dysfunction, and it isn't just an Illinois problem. We know it's going on nationally, too. When you have dysfunction, then you don't have governors and mayors who can work together. You know, you have a guy like Rahner who just says, my way or the highway, won't work with anybody. That is part of the problem. I'm sorry. And I do have to point the finger at him to some extent. And I think that's the problem. Him calling the National Guard is his own sort of admission of failure. I'm in charge of the state of Illinois, and if it's come to this point, then I'm to blame as well.
My question would be, does the issue of Chicago violence, should it be a bigger issue in the gubernatorial campaign? I haven't heard either of these candidates talk about it. They're going to be more about property taxes than they are about violence and crime. So should it be a bigger issue in this race?
It will be a bigger issue, but J.B. Pritzker's solution is I'm just going to raise your taxes and spend more money. And for the last 50 years, that hasn't worked. I agree with Eric completely on that there needs to be a complete restructuring, economic opportunity, and a place for people to go. But in the short term, right. I think there needs to be something more drastic.
Pat Brady, Eric Edelstein, as always on Thursdays, You guys are great, and we'll continue this conversation. It's one on the Cochran Show that we will continue to check in and continue it, because it seems to still have a long way from being solved. Pat, Eric, thanks for being here, guys.
Always a pleasure. Thanks.
All right, coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, we got Dean Richards, and, of course, coming up a little bit later in the show, and I'm very excited, the band Beach Bunny will be here, and from also from DuPage Picker, Swap Meet, and so much more, and Frank Fontana will be here as well. We got so much going on.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah,
honey. You know I love 720 WGN. It is the Cochran Show. Stepping up for Steve. Justin. Yeah, Dave's here. Mary's here. Mary's here. Steve's here. And Dean Richards is here.
Here.
For more on entertainment, lots to get through today, so let's get right to it. The first thing, happy anniversary, one of your co-workers, Tom Skilling.
T. Skilling, this coming Monday, actually, will be the actual 40th anniversary. Can you imagine that? 40 years of complete enthusiasm. Started here as a young, you know, happy-go-lucky meteorologist, kid from Aurora, who always loved the weather. He used to call the legendary Harry Volkman on the telephone when he was a kid in Aurora and asked questions about weather.
That's amazing.
And, you know, now is one of the most, it probably is the most respected meteorologist in America. And we love the guy, and, you know, happy to call him a friend for just about all of those 40 years. So, you know, we couldn't be happier.
Yeah.
If you want to see some of the moments that Tom may regret, it's some of the moments here on the morning show where we've put him into duty singing and doing unusual things. Those are best seen than me describing them. So if you go to WGNTV.com, you can see some of those. But it includes the famous I'm Tom Freakin' Skilling video, which maybe is the most famous of all.
I think he does not get enough credit for yes-anding every bit that the news show, the morning show, does.
He does.
He's always there for you if you need a comedy.
He could not be like nicer and more cooperative no matter what stupid thing we asked him to do.
I think, Dean, you described him as a happy-go-lucky kid. He's still a happy-go-lucky kid, even 40 years
ago. Chicago and national icon at this point.
He is, and it's all genuine, too. It's not like he's putting on, you know, some kind of phony baloney kind of deal. He is the nicest guy you will ever meet, ever. You know, we love him, and 40 years.
Wow.
That's unprecedented. That you never hear that.
Well, it speaks volumes that he leads our entertainment segment today. That gives you an idea. There's a lot of big things, but it's true. I mean, we'd start with Tom Skilling. Let's go to the second thing. Changes at the Oscars. This is something we talked about a little bit earlier, but removing some categories from the broadcast, but also adding a popular
category? Some people are outraged at this. I am not. I actually think this is for the good, and maybe even long overdue. You know, the Golden Globes have long separated their best picture categories into best dramas and best comedy or musicals. I think that they could even break that down even further, because some of the things that they've called comedy or musical are really not. So maybe breaking these categories down even more. But this new category that the Oscars have added is called Outstanding Achievement in Popular Films, which means blockbusters, basically. These are films that this year will probably be Black Panther and Mission Impossible Fallout and Avengers and Star Wars and, you know, the kind of huge, big money-making films that never get nominations. If they do, they're only in technical or special effects kind of categories. This now will give these films a platform to win Best Picture in that particular category. Now, I don't think it waters it down. Some people in Hollywood are screaming that this is, you know, the end of the movie industry, that the Oscars are doing this. I don't think this is a terrible thing to do. The fact of the matter is that while there are great films that have won the Academy Award for Best Picture, like last year's The Shape of Water, it made practically no money at all compared to some of the big blockbuster movies that came out last year. Same with Three Billboards in Ebbing, Missouri, that was a great film, but made comparatively a small amount of money. So what they're trying to do by doing this is bringing the people who go see these blockbusters, the huge audiences that are going to see these blockbusters, they're hoping then will be attracted to the Academy Awards show itself, so people can watch their favorite movie win an Academy Award. So I don't think it's a terrible idea. It doesn't water down the so-called art films at all. It gives an opportunity for the big blockbuster films also to win something. Yeah. Plus, they said in their changes that came out yesterday that the award show will never go longer than 3 hours, which I also think is great. They're going to trim it up a little bit and keep it moving. Last year it went 4 hours. Earlier this year it went 4 hours.
As a producer, it seems like, and you watch that show and you recognize why it goes long. It's never because of the spontaneity of a speech or whatever. It's the stuff they planned. It's the stuff where, like, here's the clips, and here, show us these, you know.
Yeah, here's me backstage.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. That's
doing a spoof of La La Land.
Or whatever. That's the stuff that they got to put their ego in check. And
recognize. Which, you know, enjoy those things, but not at the expense. Yeah. No one's going to sit and watch that show for 4 hours.
Right, exactly.
Except an idiot like me. I do that.
So what? Moron, not idiot.
Moron, yes. Yeah. But what they're going to do to try to tighten it up a little bit is some of the technical awards that they have presented on the air, they're going to present off the air during the commercial breaks, and presumably say during the commercial, so-and-so won best costume and so-and-so won best audio, sound, and things like that, just to keep things moving.
Yeah.
I'm sure the people who are going to be nominated for that. Maybe it's not fair to them, but the Academy is concerned and ABC TV is concerned that the ratings for the Oscar show, while they're still huge, have been declining over the past couple of years, so they're trying to stop the bleeding on that. They're also going to move the Academy Award show up earlier in awards season. Normally, it's the final award show of the year, and I think that's when people are so sick of the award shows after Critics' Choice and Golden Globes and the Screen Actors Guild and all the different award shows that go on. People are just kind of sick of the whole thing, so they're going to move it up earlier in the season, so maybe people will be more inclined to watch.
There you go. Dean Richards joins us every day here in the 8 o'clock hour to talk about entertainment coming up. Let's talk about Roseanne's in the news again. David Schwimmer joining the cast of Will and Grace. How about that? Margot Kidder, cause of death. More stories coming up here with Dean Richards and more on entertainment here on 720 WGN.
From all of us, I mean, we've been told people start sobbing. If for some, it's just a life-changing event. And we may start doing that, too. But I'll get my act together, guys. And I'll be back to you. I promise you. Guys, back to Chicago. Sorry about this.
Wow. That's a great clip.
That was the solar eclipse.
Yeah, the solar eclipse.
Where
killing tears.
It was just such a moment. Tom, I don't think... Somebody told me that Tom has not looked at that clip.
He's a broadcaster. He doesn't like to see himself cry.
Well, I think that's part of it, but I think he felt embarrassed, where everyone else felt like it was such a lovely, sweet, pure moment of honesty.
Tears show you care.
He was just so, he was, just so moved by what he saw, the genuineness. So
Dean Richards with us, of course, as he is.
I cry every day after this segment. I'm not sure because I can't.
You're not embarrassed, and you go back and listen to it over and over.
I do.
Dean Richards joins us every day in the 8 o'clock hour. All right, rapid fire here. We got about 5 minutes, so
sure.
Let's go to carpool karaoke drama. What is drama?
There's a couple of things. James Corden on The Late Late Show on CBS has been trying to do one of these carpool karaokes with Kanye West for quite a while.
That's great.
Just so he can say Kanye carpool karaoke, which is tough to say one time.
Yeah, right.
But Kanye has canceled on him three times now, according to Corden. And the cost of the most recent cancellation, $45,000.
Because they had to outfit the cars and they had to get everything, people, the employees, and
exactly,
things like that.
All set for that.
Kanye.
The other drama with that is that they were about to do, they did do a carpool karaoke with Ariana Grande, and they finished, and Ariana Grande put on Instagram shortly after that picture of her hand all bandaged up, like a bloody all gauzed up hand. She didn't say exactly what happened, but she said, you'll see when the carpool karaoke goes on the air with her. Something happened where she injured her hand. And
hitting the high notes.
She said that it was just something so stupid. And James Corden says it was the most fun carpool karaoke that they've ever done.
Yeah, I do like that segment. And if I were Kanye, just say no. You know,
I'm guessing they rolled their fingers up in the window.
Oh,
I've seen our kids do that, so that's what I'm guessing.
Or they punched somebody.
Yeah. All right, let's do a little rapid fire here.
Right? I like to think someone got punched.
David Schwimmer joining Will and Grace.
He's going to be Grace's love interest.
Smart.
At least for a little while. It's going to be a recurring role for a while. We don't know how permanent it's going to be, but nice to see our pal David Schwimmer back on regular TV after all of his years on Friends, and most notably directing when he wasn't doing that. Movies, but also plays at the Looking Glass Theater.
Yeah, NBC's got to love that. Denise Richards joining Real Housewives.
Yeah, that's pretty much the story there.
Of course, it's Dean Richards' sister, Denise.
Denise, right.
It's the Richards that my family is most proud of. Had I married Charlie Sheen, maybe my family would like me a little better. But yeah, she's going to be part of the cast. Is that, Mary, do you watch that show?
I don't. My sister is a big watcher of that, so I've seen.
Is that a big deal that she's joining it? Is that?
It is. And everyone likes the past celebrity, not much of a celebrity anymore type.
Yeah.
You know, they
the
add
big brother
a little
syndrome.
Right. She's almost like it's cool, but just cool from the olden days and Baywatch. But right. So.
You know, she's from Downers Grove.
Yeah.
Born and raised in Downers Grove.
Illinois girl. Now she's made it.
I only just learned that this morning when I was looking up her bio this morning.
And let's end on a sad note. Margot Kidder. Yeah, right?
Leave him laughing.
Woo,
cause
Margot
of death.
Kidder, cause of death. Not the greatest.
Not the greatest at all. Coroner in Montana where she was found dead in May ruled that her death was a suicide. Ruled that it was a self-inflicted drug and alcohol overdose.
Sad.
Yeah. Well.
So wait. Way to end the segment.
Yeah, that's how we do it.
Today.
I know.
I'm sorry we don't have any sadder stories to end today, but, you know, that'll have to do, I guess.
Good to talk to you, Dean. Thanks for bumming us out.
You picked the story order.
All right.
All right. See you later.
Yeah, see you, man. Oh, man. Well. Leave them laughing, as they say, right? But Margot Kidder, that's a terrible story because there was concern that maybe it was something else, but to suicide, that's a bummer. It's a bummer she died anyway. So more on entertainment every single day here, 8 o'clock hour. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back, and the swap meet, Greg Flamm is here. If you got some Stan Mikita memorabilia or possibly some stuff from the lights at Wrigley Field, we're celebrating that 30th anniversary, 312-981-7200, the best item today is going to get you a Blackhawks tickets. How about that? You like that?
I do. Blackhawks preseason tickets.
Preseason tickets. Yep. We're giving them away. But the best item for the swap meet is going to get you those tickets. So stay with us. Thanks, Steve. It is time for the swap meet here on the Cochran Show. Steve is out until tomorrow when we're at the SNL exhibit. We'll give away a couple more tickets for that in the 9 o'clock hour. This hour, Greg Flamm is here at DuPage Picker as he will, if you have some memorabilia, some collectibles, some junk that you want to know what it's worth, Greg's got your back. You can find it both on Facebook and Twitter on the handle at DuPage Picker. Hey, Greg, good to see you, buddy.
Good to be here. Hello, everyone.
Good to see you. Of course, I just put a wrinkle in the game. Are you happy about this? We are going to give away a pair of tickets to a Blackhawks preseason home game.
Oh, wow.
They're on sale now, single game preseason tickets, ChicagoBlackhawks.com. We have a pair of tickets to give away. I'm giving away to the person with the best item.
I was going to ask.
The best brag.
Best brag, right?
The best brag today. on the swap meet. 312-981-7200. The call's already mounting up, so let's get to it. Before we do that, Greg, what did you bring in today for us to feast on?
Well, we talked about the Bears Super Bowl posters last week, so I brought in one of them. They have, obviously, the Super Bowl 20 logo is what you want to look for. And this one's kind of a collage of different photos, and it has the more important score of the game at the top.
Oh, there you go.
And then some of them have the stats of the game, but some don't.
I've seen this poster. Yeah, that's a nice one. I love the my favorite is the Halas in the left corner. Everything else is action shots, and then they have in the right corner Dicka, and then Halas in a coat on the left side. He wasn't alive for the time.
My favorite is the Peyton look. You know, I played all these years for the Bears, and I can't score a touchdown in the Super Bowl.
He does have a disappointed look in the poster.
Yeah,
I like Richard Dent. It's the shot of Costas talking to him in his MVP after he got the MVP. I don't know if he's wearing a robe or what. What exactly?
Yeah, right.
And they put the names of everyone except Ditka in that caption. And
Well, he needs no name.
He needs no name. Absolutely right. And look at the weird fedora cowboy hat that the fridge is wearing.
Yep. I can't quite see it from here, who is the... Well, no, I mean, I still can't read the names, but I'm trying to figure out who would be the least remembered, even though everybody remembers everybody on that team. There's got to be somebody in there who, like... Oh, yeah, he was on that team, too.
Who's 58, Dave?
Wilbur Marshall. Wilbur Marshall.
Oh, I guess people know him. Sorry.
Blasphemy. 26?
Matt Sui.
Oh, that's right.
So those are probably your right. Yeah, over here you got a couple.
Is there
a
Henry Wachter on there anywhere?
Don't see it.
Well, maybe some of those Patriots.
Maury Buford. Right, exactly. I think, the Patriots who are missing tackles or getting sacked are probably more of the people we'll forget from the 85 Bears.
I like Costas has his notes in his hands, though. Yeah. Like, you don't see that as much anymore. Yeah, they actually have a manila folder.
That's right. A great poster here. 312-981-7200. All right. I would assume there's going to be some Stan Mikita talk, of course. We've a lot of Stan Mikita memorabilia has come through the swap meet over the years doing the segment.
Yep.
Which, of course, is sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market. But there is, I mean, that today would be the day, or this week, you'll probably out at Wolf's, you'll see more Stan Mikita stuff than usual.
I'm sure we will, yes.
All right, let's get right to it. Let's start with Kathy from Oak Park. Kathy, what do you want to brag about, Kathy?
Hi. I've got a campaign card about 2 inches by 4 inches. It's Abraham Lincoln and Andrew Johnson on the cover. And on the back, it says, published by Golden and Hammonds, number 1 South Clark Street, Chicago. I looked it up on the internet, and I came across a picture of it on Pinterest, but I'm not a member, so I didn't go any further. Maybe you guys can do that.
Yeah,
I don't have a Pinterest account, but I would love to.
I'm not sure the actual card. I can tell you that they made a lot of repros of that card. Even Topps, the baseball card company, made a repro of the card.
Reproduction, right?
But the just to give you an idea, the pins from that era for the campaign are going for $75. I'm sure the card's in that range as well.
If it's a repro, much less.
Of course, yes.
I'm sure this isn't. It was purchased from someone who's a collector out at Fox Valley. So,
I would start an auction. $75. Yeah. Start an auction on eBay. All right, Kathy. That's a good one. I like that. That's a good start.
Thanks for calling.
Let's keep going. Let's go to Bill. Bill is in Portage. Bill, welcome to. What do you want
good
to brag
morning,
about, Bill?
Bill?
Good morning.
My brother went to a batting cage in Cincinnati New Year's Eve several years ago, and Ken Griffey Jr. was playing there hitting.
He's just hitting in the batting cage?
Yeah, he was at a batting cage, just a public cage in Westchester, Ohio. And my brother approached him, and Ken gave him the bat and signed it after he was done hitting with it. And it appeared to be a game-used bat to me, too.
Wow. Wow. First of all, I'm impressed that Ken Griffey Jr. brought his own bat, because I always take one of the crappy bats that's given to you at the batting cage.
Well, they may not have had the right length for him,
true.
He probably needs...
Right, those are usually aluminum, though, and, of course...
Yeah, right, he's bringing the wooden.
He uses wood.
But also, I mean, why not just a, hey, Ken Griffey Jr., and then you get a head nod? I think it's something special. He's like, you want the bat? It's a pretty nice gesture by Griffey Jr. What does a Ken Griffey Jr. bat go for?
They're ranging between.
It is signed MVP as well.
Okay,
there you go.
A
signed Ken Griffey Jr. bat from the public batting cage in Cincinnati or Westchester.
They seem to be all over the place between 400 and upwards of 1,500.
It's amazing. And I would assume that batting cage visit was probably $2.50. Right? When quarters.
Yeah.
In quarters.
Yep.
All right, awesome.
Good
Thanks,
trade.
Bill. That's a good one. All right, we'll keep going here. Let's try Gale.
I know there's value in that bat, but that's a cooler story.
Right? The story
is what makes it. I like hearing about a superstar that's just a good guy.
Then this is your segment, because the story is what makes this one.
Most of the time, the stories are worth more than the item.
Let's go to Gale. Gale's in Aurora. Gale, what do you want to brag about?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I have some posters. They're United Airlines posters that I got at a garage sale.
Okay.
The poster was done or were done by Stan Galley.
Okay.
They've never been hung. They're not. The story that I got was that this person had a relative that worked for United Airlines in the 60s, and they collected these posters. So, like I said, they've never been hung, and they were quite a buy, and I'm not quite sure what to do with them.
I was going to say, do they say like $79 to Boston one way?
Yeah, right.
What's on the poster?
Actually, no, they're like really gorgeous. They're kind of like mid-century looking posters with models on them and the United Airlines logo of different cities. So for each city that they were flying to, they had a poster.
All right. What do you think, Greg?
Well, first off, that was the first question I was going to ask. Are they vintage, 60s, 70s? And I do really well with travel posters. I mean, I've sold some for upwards of $200 that I've gotten for like a dollar at a garage sale. So that's great. You definitely have a good find there. How many do you have?
I have six.
Six of them. Are they all the same or different?
No, they're all different.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, that is really cool. You might want to sell them like as a set, try to keep a set together if they're all different, all six at one time, and you might be looking like $1,500 or more for the set. But I don't know that I don't know that artist, but I know that era of airline and tourism posters, they do really well. Yeah. And if you have any that have Disney on them, that makes it even higher.
Oh, wow. There you go.
Oh, okay.
Thanks, Gail.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
That's good. You know, I got to start thinking every time I see poster on Michigan Avenue that says "Want to get away?"
Right.
I'm going to rip that down and take then wait for 25 years. Right?
Yeah. I'm going to say your wife's going to say no. Do not start collecting things,
babe. We got to hang on to this JetBlue poster.
Yeah, I can't throw anything away without checking it first. No.
Greg Flam is here. He's at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. We're doing the swap meet, which is sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market. We'll take a quick break here. We'll come back and continue. I want to give away a pair of tickets to the Blackhawks preseason home game. The best brag during the swap meet today is going to get it. We're doing a swap meet here on the Cochran Show, 720 WGN. Steve's back tomorrow. Greg Flam is here at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter, as we evaluate your collectibles, your memorabilia, your junk. 312-981-7200. Today, the special wrinkle is that I'm giving a pair of tickets to the Blackhawks preseason home game away to the best brag. If that makes sense. The best brag. All right, let's keep going. Let's go to Jim. Jim's in Downers Grove. What do you want to brag about, Jim?
Well, I've got a unique Stan Mikita item. It's a Sharpie that's autographed by Stan. He gave it to my, at that time, 9-year-old daughter while sitting in his living room.
Wow. So he autographed the pen that you usually would autograph. It's so meta.
Correct.
It's a meta.
Yeah. Yeah, he also gave her, a photo and a puck and apologized that he was out of sticks. But the story is good because I used to work in the town where Stan had lived, and I met him one day and asked him if he would autograph an item for my 9-year-old daughter. And he said, well, why don't you just bring her by the house one day? So we a few days later, my wife and I and our 9-year-old daughter were sitting in his living room for about 2.5 hours talking with him and his wife.
That's amazing. The story is worth more than the item.
Yeah, right? And I mean, I don't know what you would get for a Stan Mikita signed Sharpie, but the story is priceless. But what does a Stan Mikita Sharpie?
The highest price Stan Mikita item right now that I'm finding for like the last 3 months is a stick, a signed stick for $183, and I'm obviously it's very obvious that price is going to go up from the next week or two anyway, and then it might drop down a little bit. But yeah, I mean the Sharpie, I mean that's you know. It's hard to put a price on that, but the story is really
good. Mike, and Joe asked the same question. Is the uniqueness of the item that you sign, does that make it worth anything more?
Yeah. Not a Sharpie. I mean, we've had people call like other sports stars, like a football star signing a baseball. You know, right. it sometimes it hurts it more than it helps. But yeah, a Sharpie, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say with that. Yeah,
that's good. That's a good one.
It is a good story, though.
A good story. Let's go to Joe. Joe's in Niles. Joe, you got... What do you want to brag about, Joe?
Well, I got a short story. I was in Cooperstown, New York, and I walk into the statistics room, and I look up on the wall, and they got Nolan Ryan's all-time strikeout record. Well, the number's wrong. I happen to know the number is 5,714. I just knew it. I turn to this big guy who's standing there. He's in the suit guarding all those stuff, and I said, you know, you got to change that number. That number is incorrect. It should be 5,714. And he said, yeah, write us a letter. So I wrote him a letter, and about a month later, I got a letter from Cooperstown saying, thank you very much. We corrected the statistics room for Nolan Ryan's stat. Well, I sent the letter from Cooperstown to Nolan Ryan at Texas Rangers just to let him know that I saved his strikeout record, and I got a package from the Texas Rangers about 3 weeks later, no letter, no nothing, but an autographed picture from Nolan Ryan, and the picture is Nolan Ryan in a bloodied jersey.
Oh, wow.
So he knew I was from Chicago, and he's giving me the stick because he's beat up Robin Ventura.
Amazing. That's a great story.
That's an awesome, unbelievable story, Joe.
Hysterical.
You got a couple twists going on there, too.
Joe, really, the item here is you have two items. One is this autographed Nolan Ryan, the bloody jersey, which is awesome. But also, the letter sent to Cooperstown, which is, and they acknowledged the mistake.
Forget about all that.
Yeah,
that
letter had everything that I fixed the stat.
This is my kind of guy, because I'm quality control wherever I go, and I'm always noticing errors and things like that, and I like to think that you spoke up and said something, because my husband will say, do you need to bring that up? And I said, yes, I do, because it's wrong. Yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to say, the fact that he knew to say something about that.
Yeah, and you know what, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, to correct the Hall of Fame,
I'm
so proud of that.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
Joe, stay on the line, because I want to give you a pair of tickets to a Blackhawks preseason home game.
Oh, man, that's amazing.
That's a great story, right?
Oh,
that can't
be beat. You guys made my day.
Thanks for calling. Thanks, Joe. Thanks for calling. How about that, right?
That's great.
I mean, that's an amazing story.
It is. It's got three or four nice twists.
I've never heard of anyone correcting the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
That's always good.
It is.
Let's keep going. Michelle's got a good item in Hanover Park. Michelle, what do you want to brag about?
I have, my husband actually has from his grandmother. We have a picture of the Chicago Cubs in 1958, and they've signed the back of it. Like, the whole team signed the back of it.
Wow. The 1958 Cubs. What's special about the 1958 Cubs?
I don't know why that was the day, but it does have, like, Ernie Banks, and my husband would be a better person talking about this, but
he doesn't even fail her.
I don't know. That's your husband would educate me as well.
Unfortunately, I don't think there was anything really special about the 1958 Cubs, or we would talk about them more.
But Ernie Banks, I guess, would be.
Well, Ernie, you had the foundation for the great teams of the six. I mean, the
what do you think about a 69? Full team 1958? Thanks, Michelle.
Well, as we talked about, sometimes it's really hard to authenticate a whole team signing something. You know, maybe sometimes 3 or 4 or 5, 10 of them are auto penned or a secretary signed it. So that you really have to, you know, make sure if you can get it authenticated. I would do that if you are going to sell it. On the other hand, then, too, we talked to where one signature can be worth more than the team as well. So I can't, I don't know. I mean,
it's hard to say.
Yeah, you just got to do an auction, really.
Cool.
Maybe 100, 200 to start and go from there. Hopefully it goes higher.
They were 72 and 82 and finished fifth.
Well,
but they did have Ernie Banks.
They did have Ernie Banks. All right, real quick, rapid fire some stuff on text that was good. A 1986 framed Taste of Chicago poster. 847 says the artist who did it that year was quite famous.
Yeah, I'd say a couple hundred dollars. I've seen those before, and I would like to find one myself just to keep it.
And 847 has, is there a market for old farm tools?
There is.
They have a scythe from the turn of the century. That's how you say that, right? Scythe?
Yep. And, I, you know, I can't put a price on that, but there is definitely a market. I would definitely research that. If you want to write me through Facebook, I can help you with that
as well. There you go. All right. And finally, a Chicago Cubs Cabbage Patch doll, full uniform wrapped in a plastic bag.
Yeah, they're going for $40, but people are asking crazy amounts. I've seen some for $250, $200, but I've seen five or six sell recently for $40 and $50. Huh. So,
all right. Well, that was a great swap meet, guys. Yep. We got some good stories. We corrected the Hall of Fame, and we also got trolled by the Texas Rangers. So fun. Greg Flam can be found at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook, his Facebook page, and on Twitter and Instagram. At DuPage Picker is the handle. Greg is with us here Thursdays, sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market. Greg, always great to have you here.
And everybody. Peloton Wolf's as well.
Yep.
I'd like to thank Cousin Subs. I'm the most popular person right now at work because they did a food drop, and we've got a lot of subs and chips in the kitchen for all the WGN employees.
We're on the air, so it's hard to get to those subs.
I know,
subs.
We won't eat them.
Get a sub on the way out, Greg.
Steve Grzanich will grab one, but they can be reached at 312-505-1947.
Right, there you go.
They're delicious, too, by the way.
There you go. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. We got a lot to talk about in the 9 o'clock hour, including doggy fashion show coming up in September.
Coming up in the peninsula,
And then we're also going to have, which I'm very excited, live music from the Chicago band Beach Bunny. So much to do here, so let's get to it. It's just my
dog. This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
720 WGN, it's the Steve Cochran Show. Stepping up for Steve today. Justin, I'm here with you both on WGN and CLTV. Coming up just in a couple minutes, we'll have live performance from Chicago's Beach Bunny in our performance studio. Excited to have them here. Great band. Some events coming up as well. And Frank Fontana is going to join us a little bit later in the hour as well. But first, we got to talk doggy fashion. This is something that has become quite the event in Chicago. This will be the third annual hot.
Justin's been practicing saying it all morning long.
Hot. That's what I would say, right? See, I feel like I've been coached wrong. Hot.
This is coming from a guy who can't say the word picture, so.
All right. That's true. That is a deficiency for me. I can't say the word picture. The Hout Dog Runway Fashion Show for a fundraiser for Canine Companions is coming up in September. It's a huge event. It was made really popular. I think it was last year with Brian Urlacher and his dog. And in studio with us now, Laurel Marks. She's the executive director of Canine Companions and two board members. Katie Sandberg, of course, famous. Sandberg, Mary's sister, and Philip Amy as well, one of the board members. Philip, thanks for being here. Laurel, thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Appreciate the promotion. I'm actually the senior development director, but I'll answer
all
to
right,
executive
there you go.
Director.
Senior development director. We'll take that. All right. So talk about Canine Companion, because this is really about service dogs. Obviously, the Hout Dog gets a lot of play because of the fashion show concept of the show, but this is really about the idea of a little bit more about the Canine Companion portion, the idea of the service dog.
Sure. So we're a national nonprofit. We have six regional training centers across the country. The closest training center to Chicago is located in Columbus, Ohio, and it's the North Central region. We support 14 states, and Chicago has a great presence with graduates and volunteer puppy raisers and donors, and they support this event, and we provide assistance dogs to children, adults, and veterans who have a disability other than blindness.
And it's so important as well, because there is so much that's needed to, when we talk about these dogs, training. I mean, training is you talk about the breeding, but also just being able to train these dogs specifically for the mission that they need to serve.
So our program is super unique. So our instructors, it takes them 3 years to earn the title to be an instructor. And our dogs learn over 50 commands. They're task-based commands. So they learn to pick up dropped items, turn on and off light switches. I've worked for the company for 9 years, and I still clap every time I see a dog turn on and off a light switch.
Philip, why do you get involved in this?
We first got involved because we own a pet boutique, Tales in the City, and they reached out to us to be a partner for the doggy fashion portion of the event. And once we met with Laurel and got more involved with the organization, went to Columbus for a graduation ceremony, found out all the amazing work that this organization does, it was easy, you know, to be a part of such a great organization. And it's easy to give your time if it's the right organization, right. And really it is.
And then my sister, she was involved because her dog Biscuit, who we've talked about quite a bit here on the show, who just had his 8th birthday. You
happy
can see
birthday,
the gallery
Biscuit,
at WGNradio.com. You know, Biscuit walked in the fashion show because Biscuit shops at Tales in the City, and he likes the high fashion. And then this last year, Katie was asked to be a part of putting all of this together, and I said, don't agree to that. It's a lot of work. Being a part of a board is...
No, her first thing was, don't you ask me for any help with this.
Yes, because she likes to agree to things and then wants to put it on me. But this is her love. She loves the dogs. You know, she loves Biscuit, and she loves what they're doing.
So, correction, though. He wasn't asked to be in the fashion show because I shop there. He was asked to be in the fashion show because Biscuit is an influencer, so he brings a lot of people.
Exactly. Thank you, Katie.
Brings a lot of people to the event. Everyone comes to see him. But truly, when I first got involved, I was just asked to be on it because of Biscuit. And then when I arrived there and saw like the service portion, because I just thought it was a fun, indulgent event for people like me with dogs. But as a physical therapist, obviously I am very connected to people who have any kind of physical challenges and whatnot. And I thought it was the perfect meshing of, you know, I love and support dogs, but more importantly, you know, people with any sort of disabilities in order to be independent and live in the world. Like, it just... perfect marriage of things for me.
Philip, back to the event.
Yes.
When you talk about a fashion show for dogs, what are we talking about? Dressing them up? What makes a good fashion show for dogs?
Well, first off, it's the participant. So a dog like Biscuit that everybody already loves wants to come to the event. And who doesn't want to go to the Peninsula Hotel to have a doggy fashion show? The people are kind of secondary. It's nice that they get dressed up, but really, you're there for the dogs.
Right.
You're there for the dogs. The reason, you know, we got involved was because of the dog connection. Now it's something even bigger than it was originally. Now it's like, we're involved because this is changing people's lives, and it happens to be done through a dog who's dressed up.
Do
so
you,
who
do you
cares?
Have to remind the humans that an
sometimes,
occasion?
Yeah. Sometimes. They always think it's about them.
They
and
do.
Really,
you,
I have to tell them, it's the dog.
And the dog, last year, Jim Rose, you know, the sports anchor, his dog had a little accident on the runway.
That's right.
While
That's
he
fame.
Was...
right.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but for people like the canine companions and things they help, you were talking about the light switches, Laurel. Also, like, pulling off your socks... helping do, like, putting laundry out of the dryer. Like, they help all things that you take for granted at home. And these helps these people live independently.
It really does. It really does.
Absolutely. And, you know, talking about the dogs, it's really about the people and people with disabilities. That's who we serve. We use assistance dogs to help the people with disabilities, but we really are a human services organization, Canine Companions.
And I want to get back to the training, because we've seen emotional support dogs and assistant dogs and pets in the news because of travel. We saw this with the airlines. This was a big story this year. But the big difference is the training. The idea that these dogs are trained specifically for this. They're not just there because the human wants them on their lap to pet. There are actual services and utility to the function and the things that they deliver.
Absolutely. A lot of our recipients would not be able to do things on their own without the support of their assistance dogs. And we provide assistance dogs and successor dogs once their dog retires or passes away. And we also do follow-up services for the lifespan of the team. So from birth through retirement, the dog's value is $50,000, and we provide these dogs free of charge. And that is why we do the fundraiser Hout Dog, to raise funds and awareness for our mission.
All right, so last year, hard to top Jim's dog
peeing on the
carpet of Ryan Urlacher. What can we expect from this year at the Peninsula coming up in the middle of September?
You know, I think the teaser really is going to be who, in fact, is going to show up, because we've already set the bar pretty high. We have a couple people that we're trying to get
to our side. We just made a request last night, and hopefully this couple will walk the runway. And if you're listening, please say yes.
So Katie persuasion. And Biscuit will be there.
Definitely
right.
Katie and Biscuit. Hey,
that's there. There you go. Right.
And also, if you cannot make the event, is there somewhere where you can donate?
So just along those lines, because the Hope Dog thing, we were talking about this last night because we had a little fundraiser for it. If you can't make the event and or it's not really in your wheelhouse going to a dog fashion show, if you go to the link that, Mary, you can put up, I suppose.
I'll link it on the
CCI.org.
CCI.org.
So that's where the ticket sales are. But if you scroll down past the 2017 photos, that's where there's different options of donating different amounts of money. So
there you go.
Perfect.
The Hot Dog Fashion Doggy Runway Fashion Show is coming up September 20th at the Peninsula. It's a fundraiser for Canine Companions. The Senior Development Director, Laurel Marks. I've already downgraded you from executive director. See what I did there.
I got a promotion for a minute.
For a minute, right. Also, two of the board members, Katie Sandberg and Philip Amy, are here. Katie, Philip, I'm very excited. I cannot tell you how excited or how fun it's been this week to hear about Biscuit's birthday and also about Pete dropping all the Coronas at the party.
It was fabulous.
So fabulous.
And maybe next year you'll get the invite.
Yeah. Thanks, you guys, for being here, and good luck with the event on September 20th.
Thanks for having us.
Well, this is definitely Wacker Drive. If my estimations are correct, we should be very close.
Steve Cochran on 720 WGN.
In for Steve today, or stepping up for Steve Cochran, Justin Kaufman. Very excited right now because coming up, Frank Fontana is going to join us. But right now we're utilizing our performance studio and our beautiful new studios here at 303 East Wacker. And in it is one of my favorite bands, Chicago band Beach Bunny. Beach Bunny has had a great year, and they're just about to release a brand new EP called Prom Queen. They're playing Subterranean in Wicker Park this Sunday. They're also playing Riot Fest coming up this fall. This band has big ambitions and continues to grow, and they are live in our performance studio now. Here they are. Beach Bunny, take it away.
Shut up. Count your calories. I never look good in mom jeans. Wish I was like you. Blue-eyed blondie. Perfect body. Maybe I should try harder. You should lower your
band Beach Bunny in our performance studio here on the Cochran Show. Beach Bunny, will be playing at Subterranean coming up on Sunday. They also have their new EP, Prom Queen, which is out. They're playing Riot Fest as well, the big music festival in Douglas Park coming up this fall. Lily Trufilio is the lead singer. She was singing there. Jonathan Alvarado, Matt Henkels, Aiden Keita. We'll talk with the band a little bit later in the show, get some more music as well. Beach Bunny. Love it. And you know, I've interviewed them before, and they're kids from DePaul. They've had a huge year for them. They put out another EP back in earlier this year. Tremendous band.
Mary Vandeveld saw them playing, and she said, "Not only are they Beach Bunny, they're Beach Babies because they are young.
They are young.
And, so young.
Some of our young sales guys are out there, and they said this is so cool watching them perform in that performance studio.
Beach Bunny is awesome.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we'll talk with these guys coming up here on the Steve Cochran Show. Frank Fontana as well. Stepping up for Steve Cochran today, Justin Cobbin, 720 WGN. The band Beach Bunny is in our performance studio. We're going to hear them in just a moment. That's another song getting up on the table as well. Talk with them about their success. They're releasing a new EP tomorrow called Prom Queen, and they're playing Subterranean this weekend for the record release party, and they're playing Riot Fest coming up, which will be coming up here sometime in September. I forgot what weekend it is. Now Dave knows, but...
I have it on my... I have it on my calendar.
Yeah,
I have it in my BlackBerry.
There you go. Frank Fontana joins us. Frank, of course, the host of his own WGN program here, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it usually happens.
The White Sox seem to be playing every Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, fortunately, right in my time slot.
It tells you, though, in a couple of years when... What will happen is they'll be playing those games at 8 o'clock for ESPN Sunday Night Baseball because they're so popular.
Sure.
Right now they're playing the 1 o'clock games.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Anyway, good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you, man. Thanks
for having
me.
So lots to talk about. Of course, you know, what I think today we were just talking about, you know, we talk about design, and I am a big fan of interior design and rehab and all the stuff that's on HGTV and all the way around. But bedrooms.
Yes.
This is something that is close to your heart. But but the question being, can you revitalize your love life if you redesign your bedroom?
I think the biggest tip is separate bedrooms for spouses.
There's something to that.
That would be a good revitalization.
Our grandparents had it right, I think. Having the two separate, you know, single beds in the same, maybe not even in the same room.
Okay, why was that with grandparents? Because both of my grandparents slept in different rooms.
Because they were smart.
Is it snoring? And I believe in it too. I'm with you, Mayor.
I think a degree of separation in relationship is not a bad thing. And what I mean by that is having the ability to have your own little zone to whether, you know, you're designing that room yourself or, you know, but I think it brings to the bigger question is, does that mean the romance is gone?
Right.
You know, and I get challenged a lot in design to make these bedrooms into more like a boom boom room. You know, maybe in a way trying to reignite the passion in a relationship through great design. You know, and there's some elements that come along with that. But, you know, I posed a question to our listeners. Would a well-designed, sexier bedroom make you want your partner more? You know, because there's the layers of the psychological. I mean, part of what I do in design is psychology. I'm constantly in the middle of relationships.
Right,
because the he said and she said, and the husband wants that, and she wants that. But, you know, like, I do believe a well-designed bedroom can at least elicit a more sexier vibe.
Well, I think about a design of any room would want you to stay in that room. So if like my wife says, her favorite room is the bedroom, right? She likes the design of it. It's a high ceiling kind of thing, so she spends more time in that space as opposed to, like, I don't necessarily like it, the way that it's designed, so I like the room downstairs, so I hang out in that room. So maybe there's something to it in the way that how it's designed.
Well, let me ask you this, Justin. You'd be a perfect client. Would a would a more warmer, you know, something with texture, darker walls, rich fabrics, maybe a little more ambient lighting. Would that be
velvet?
Velvet. Right. We talked about that last time.
Mirrors on the ceiling.
Mirrors on the ceiling.
Go, Justin.
Yeah, I mean, would that Justin, help you? Because you're saying two things. So one thing is spending time in the room, whether it's reading or hanging out. But I'm talking about next level, man.
I don't know if that would make a difference.
I don't think
Mary, what do you think?
Well, I know when we've stayed at sexier hotels, We're flat out uncomfortable in the sexy. Like, when it's a little bit too provocative, I prefer more traditional, like, I want it to be like my grandma's wallpaper and things like that. Like, I feel out of...
Really?
When there's red and, yeah, sleek things going on, it's just, I feel uncomfortable.
But, so it doesn't help get you in the mood?
No, but I might not be the more normal.
Could you design a bedroom to look just like the Sybaris?
Is that sure. Something that you yeah, could do? Exactly. I mean, Dave, would you, you know, feel,
I mean,
feel
Dave's
more...
bedroom is designed so that Ozzy has a spot on the bed, right?
Yeah. Well, until it's time to go to sleep. And then he goes
Ozzy
on
retires
the floor.
To his own bed? Okay.
Yeah, but the like the mirror on the ceiling thing... For the hours we work, you don't want anything that might reflect light back towards your eyes.
Yeah. Right.
So that doesn't work.
Yeah, reality.
Like,
yeah.
As dark as possible.
Yes.
So what does it matter, the ambiance, if the lights are off anyway?
Well, yeah. And listen, are we talking about something that just doesn't happen anymore? I mean, are people not as romantic in the bedroom?
That's a good... I mean,
as they used to be?
I wonder. I wonder because the bedroom is a place that is has a lot of different functions.
Sure.
I mean, as Dave was just mentioning, I mean, I find myself needing a bedroom that has a space to lay out clothing in the dark because I have to wake up at 5 o'clock before the sun rises to get ready to come to work. So, and I also think about just a bedroom that's designed for one of us to go to sleep before the other, or vice versa, you know, that kind of thing. That there seems to be a lot of functionality in the bedroom that's beyond just the boom.
I think we've hit on something else for you, Frank.
What's that?
This is to design a bedroom for people who do morning radio.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yes.
A little niche market.
But are you finding more people wanting to get to redecorate or redesign their bedrooms?
Definitely. I mean, it's one of the hot spots in the house outside the kitchen and the bathrooms. I think the bedrooms, because you spend a lot of time there. But I think, you know, what I'm hearing is that there actually is a need, because we're all talking about real life stuff, but no one's mentioning the fact that they've not connected romantically with their wife or spouse, you know, their husband.
I'm a big believer. I mean, what are you seeing in the trends for bedrooms? Because I'm a big believer. I don't have a TV in the bedroom.
Sure.
Like, the idea is that room is for sleep and some of the, like, getting dressed, things like that.
Yeah.
But are you seeing more design trends that push away from that concept, that it's more a catch-all room for everything?
Yes and no.
Put a stove in there?
Put a stove, right, a microwave. Ironically, yeah, I've designed recently what's happening is, especially in city living, you're seeing like a floor dedicated to the entire bedroom. So it becomes a master suite versus just a room.
Right.
So in that idea, you're having a kitchenette in that floor. You're having
to not have to leave the room and get your coffee right in the room is
totally
a total treat,
right?
I would say.
And then having a wine cooler so that at night, maybe instead of hanging out separately downstairs, maybe you're on that same floor and one person is drinking the wine and the other one's getting ready in the bedroom or whatever it is. But I, you know, I'm an old romantic. I do want to see more people back in the boom boom room, you know, and if design can help make that happen. You know, I think that's not a bad thing. So trend-wise, what I'm seeing is, you know, there is TV still existing in bedrooms. I'm still getting the call for them. But the difference is we're doing a lot more hidden stuff. So retractable, you know, TVs that come up from the bottom of the bed and or built into a room where it's maybe, you know, a smoked glass over it. But then, you know, those bathrooms where you go into and the changes and it looks people are going to see. That kind of idea, doing some cabinetry over the television. You know, because TV is such a part of our culture
today. We have
today.
A TV in our bedroom. I don't find... I think Dave... But, like, we don't watch it at night going to... Like, I can't fall asleep with the TV on, so the TV doesn't go on at night. Only, like, on a Sunday morning when we wake up, we watch some golf channel.
I would see my wife can't fall asleep without the TV on.
So you let her do that while you're laying
Well, no, bed? Because she's... She...
I would be so... I'm so mean. I would be like, turn it off.
We're
I have
beyond
to
design now. We're into relationship
That's where it goes. Because you're designing for life. You're designing, you know, so, hey, everyone's got their own different flavors.
Yeah, Pat has
to
stay on the couch and watch television, which is why he falls asleep on the couch, and then I yell at him for falling asleep on the couch. So that's... I set him up to fail, and that's how it works.
And I'm going
to
ask you a weird question. Do you have a comfortable duvet? Do you have a
We do. I love our bedding.
Right.
Yeah, we have.
We can go.
I have a mattress for a mattress that was better than going to marriage counseling.
Really,
it changed our lives because he moves a lot and I don't feel it, and it's really helped.
And don't you think you should change your design like three times, like pre-kids, during kids, post-kids?
Yeah.
Like change the bedrooms. Because, you know, when the kids are around, you can't have certain things in the bedroom. Like you're talking about a wine cooler and all this other stuff. And then later, you know, you're like, hey, the kids are all gone, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's why...
The whole house becomes the master bedroom when the kids are gone.
Well, yeah, not really.
I know. you know, I have a 4 and 6 year old and my whole house is a toy room. You know, like I can't get away from the toys. But, you know, I think that if you are feeling like, say the kids are out of the house, right? You're empty nesters. You only have each other at that point. So you're either going to reconnect or you're going to disconnect. And if you can create spaces that make you connect, at least try it. It's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think if you could do things like warmer colors in the room, some you know, on the windows, instead of opting for, you know, cold slatted blinds, go with some fabric on the windows. Little things like that give you a little bit of that romantic feel. Right?
Sounds good. Frank Fontana, who usually can be heard here on
Sundays from 1 to 3,
but not right now.
Not right now. We'll be back in October. You can follow me online, frankfontana.net, Instagram, social media. I'm very heavily engaged, so you can find the same kind of content out there.
We love having you here. Frank Fontana, check him out. All right, here's what we'll do. We'll get an update on what's coming up in the 10 o'clock news, and after that, we will have another live performance with Beach Bunny in our performance studio.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
All right, the Steve Cochran Show coming up, Bill and Wendy. But first, Beach Bunny, the band, has been in our performance studio today. They are playing at Subterranean Wicker Park coming up on Sunday. They got an EP coming out called Prom Queen. They also got Riot Fest coming up. Let's go out to the band. I think they're standing by and make sure we can get them. I just heard myself back in my headphones, so I'm not sure if that's going to work. But the band, which are in our studio, Lily Trefilio, Jonathan Alvarado, Matt Henkels, and Alan Cata, and they are here. Guys, thanks for joining us. Good to talk to you again.
Hi.
All right, so I have a quick question before we get back into the music to wrap up the show. Talk about Prom Queen. I mean, you have had such success in the last couple EPs and albums that you've put out. What distinguishes this music from the past songs?
Yeah, we're really excited. I think this one's a little more rockin' and a little more dancey.
That's great. And how excited, I mean, to play Riot Fest and to continue the success that you had, how are you guys feeling? I had a chance to talk to you maybe a year ago, and we talked about, and you can find that conversation on WGN Radio, but I mean, how do you feel about how the career has progressed?
Oh, yeah, it's super exciting. I feel like we're all going to cry at Riot Fest together.
You said the song is more fun. Is that because you're in a more fun place right now?
Yeah, maybe.
That's good. All right. Lily Trefilio and the band Beach Bunny in our performance studio. Lily, what are we going to hear here?
This is called Painkiller.
All right. This is the track Painkiller, which is off Prom Queen. Prom Queen out tomorrow. And they're playing Subterranean on Sunday, as well as Riot Fest coming up in September. Here they are in our performance studio. Beach Bunny, take it away.
Cause I'm
Beach Bunny, live in our performance studio here on 720 WGN. Beach Bunny's playing at Subterranean this Sunday, as well as Riot Fest coming up in September. Lily Trufilio, Jonathan Alvarado, Matt Henkels, and Aiden Cata. The band Beach Bunny and their EP Prom Queen is out tomorrow. Awesome to have Beach Bunny in studio. Sounded awesome. And I'm excited to have them close out the Steve Cochran Show today. Tomorrow, we're going to be at the SNL exhibit doing a live remote. A big show lineup. Dan Aykroyd going to join us. How cool is that, huh? I think that's pretty cool.
It's very cool. And the exhibit's cool? Really cool.
Yeah, right?
Lucky you get to go back again.
That's right. 312-981-7200 right now. Seventh caller is going to get tickets to go to that event if you want. Bill's texting in, right? He's calling.
Hope I win.
Seventh caller, 312-981-7200 if you want to be our guest at the SNL exhibit tomorrow morning for the broadcast and a private tour of the exhibit, which will only be open till the end of the year. So that's tomorrow. Seventh caller right now. Bill and Wendy, good to see you guys.
Can I tell you what my favorite moment of the show was this morning? That? Frank Fontana refers to the bedroom as the boom boom room, and nobody calls him on it. Everybody just lets it happen.
I wanted to so bad, but he was so convincing with that phrase. Convincing.
Yeah, I mean, he's the interior guy. Well, he's the interior design guy.
Like, is that like a phrase that I'm supposed to know about, but don't? So that
does he say that when he's working with clients? I got some ideas for your boom boom room.
If you watch Property Brothers, they're probably saying boom boom room every third sentence, right?
I'm sure he didn't tell Robin Laura Petrie that it was called the boom boom room.
No.
In their twin beds.
No.
What do you guys got coming up on the show?
We're going to talk about Mr. Rogers. Did you grow up watching Mr. Rogers?
I did, yeah. And you know what? We're going to the Mr. Rogers exhibit at the, I think it's a Pittsburgh Museum coming up in 2 or 3
days. Oh, that'll be fun.
They have the actual set and everything in there that you see.
Why are you guys talking about him?
Well, because there's this guy who didn't like him. I kind of thought he was too gentle for me, quite honestly. I didn't dislike him, but there's a writer who said the same thing, was more of a fan of the Electra Company and Sesame Street, as was I. And then he met him, and his whole view changed.
I always liked him because it was so ordered, the way he took off his sweater.
Of course you would like that.
Have you seen the documentary that's out?
Not yet. Won't you be my neighbor?
Yeah, I've heard it's really good.
Yeah, so
everybody says.
We're going to take Miles to see that. And then we're going to, so he's not bored to death.
Yeah.
See? The exhibit. If he didn't, it'll know.
The exhibit's the kids supposed today to be great.
They show the neighborhood of make-believe.
They show his boom boom room.
That's disgusting.
It's a callback.
Fontana.
It's good.
It's all Fontana. He wrote that for me.
Have a great show, guys.